Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Does modern science extend our lives or prolong our deaths? On a daily basis, we are bombarded with ads for drugs that seem to promise strong and healthy bodies long into old age, coupled with reports of scientific breakthroughs on the horizon and feel-good news stories about remarkable seniors who skydive and tap dance and run marathons. But as my guest today will remind us, there is a stark difference between what many of us will experience as young old people in our 60s and 70s and what happens if we reach old age in our 80s and 90s. At those ages, minds and bodies tend to get progressively weaker, and the independence we once took for granted dissolves into hardship and need. Author Susan Jacoby writes the Spirited Atheist blog for the Washington Post-sponsored website On Faith. Her newest book is called Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age. Susan, welcome to Think.
Yes, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy not to be in Dallas at the moment from what I'm seeing about the weather report.
I know. Typically this time of year you'd envy our weather, but not today.
I know.
So talk about why you hate this ubiquitous phrase, age-defying or defying old age.
I hate it because it implies that all you have to do to not be old, in other words, to be the age you are, but not look old or act old or have any of the health problems of old people, is to just say, I'm going to defy old age. I'm not going to get old. As if this were something, and this is a very common baby boomer conceit, as if just by behaving well and acting well and eating your vegetables and exercising and doing all those things we all know we're supposed to do and many of us do, that you can somehow avoid what comes to everyone, which is at a certain point in old age, things begin to go wrong.
Yeah, you know what's so interesting about that, Susan, is that it's almost an excuse for some people to say, well, it must be your fault if somehow you are old and are having these severe cognitive problems or you're having physical health problems. Like, I don't act the way you must have 30 years ago, and so that won't happen to me.
Well, you know, wouldn't it be nice to think so?
Hmm.
We would all, it's very human to think that if you just do everything right, then those bad things won't happen to you. But the fact is that if you live to be 85, and these are not pleasant things to think about, and no one likes to, 50% of people over 85 have dementia, of which Alzheimer's is the leading cause. Now, there has been a lot written in the last 10 years or so about how you can prevent this by exercising and eating right and all of those things and not smoking. And unfortunately, this doesn't mean that exercising and eating right and not smoking are not great things for their own sake,
sure,
because they will help your health altogether. But a rigorous review in the last few years by the National Institutes of Health, which was released last year, shows that there is no scientifically reliable evidence that any of this, if for whatever reason you're going to get Alzheimer's, and it seems to be genetically related, but nobody knows what the genes are yet for late onset Alzheimer's, that you can. And so the idea that there are things we can do to guard us against these things, it's just wrong, and it would make me laugh if it wouldn't make me cry. I know something about this. My partner of 15 years, who was 15 years older than I am, I'm 65, had Alzheimer's for 5 years before he died. Mercifully, cancer killed him before he entered the final stages of it.
Mm-hmm.
Non-smoker, thin, big exerciser, never watched his cholesterol, all of that. So it would be very nice to think that if we just live right, those things that happen to 50% of all people over a certain age aren't going to happen to us. But the truth is, it's a crapshoot, and there are a lot of diseases that are age-related, and no matter what you do in earlier life, you may be healthier a little longer or you may not, depending on how the genes fall. And we all hope for medical research to bring about something to delay this or a cure for it, but the best scientists say that is decades, not years down the road. In other words, it's not going to really be there for those of us who are our late 50s and 60s.
Yeah, you know, Susan, I found your candor very moving when you wrote about your partner, because you admit that even you had thought early on, being together with someone who was 15 years older, you thought, well, this can't happen to him because he is so smart and so active, and he's not in that category of people who get this disease.
I thought it couldn't happen to me either. Look, I know better. I've done a lot of writing about science. I know that intelligent people and educated people and hardworking people get Alzheimer's disease. But I think there's always this unconscious thing, again, it's very human, that says, not me. Oh, that couldn't possibly happen to me. I work so hard. I have such an active mind. These illusions are quickly dispelled when it happens to someone close to you who also has all those qualities. Mm-hmm.
Why is that? You know, virtually every adult, not even older adults, has seen someone they're close to get to a point in their lives where they're incredibly difficult. Why are we all so convinced that we're different, do you think?
Well, it's the idea of growing old is frightening. The idea of not being able to do the things, most of the things that have given your life meaning, is frightening. There is nothing more universally human than the idea that while bad things happen to those people, they're not going to happen to us. But in this case, the bad thing is associated with age itself. And there's nothing new about thinking that some magic shield is going to protect you from bad things that happen to others. What's new, I think, is right now is, first of all, we have an exaggerated faith in medical miracles. And by we, I'm talking about the aging boomers who are just now crossing that 65 threshold. That's understandable. We've lived through a lot of medical miracles. A lot of the first memories of the older boomers are of standing in line to get the Salk polio vaccine.
Sure.
When I was a little girl, before it came along, when I was 9 years old, parents trembled every summer that their children might get polio. In our lifetime, in our childhood, that was eradicated. Things that are available to people now, such as joint replacements, for example, that was the stuff of science fiction 30 years ago when our parents were the age that we are now. But these kinds of things are things in which you identify a virus, in which you, in effect, mechanically replace a part. They are not part of the genetic biological clock process of aging, whose diseases are much more complicated.
Where's the dividing line between young old and old old?
Well, of course, that differs for each person.
Yeah.
There are people who are physically in worse shape at 70 than some people are at 85. But in general, what sociologists consider the young old are people in their 60s and 70s, and the old old are people in their 80s and 90s. And the old old is the fastest growing group in the population, and this is going to continue to be true there in 20 years. In 20 years, it's not like saying 100 years from now or 200 years from now. Those of us who are just crossing that 65 threshold are going to be 85, and those are the years when the age-related diseases really mount up. The risk of Alzheimer's, for instance, doubles every 5 years when you're over 65. You know, I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news. And some people say, why do you concentrate on the negative? I don't. Yeah, we can all hope that we'll be Betty White, the hottest late night talk show guest at 89. We can all hope that we'll be Justice John Paul Stevens, who's now 91 and still just writing brilliant articles after his retirement from the Supreme Court. But these are exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing I think that has given my generation a lot of delusions is this idea of self-transformation. All you have to do is just try hard enough and you can beat anything. And that's where this age-defying stuff comes from. I decided to write this book when I attended a couple of years ago a panel at the World Science Festival titled 90 is the New 50. And it made me laugh. And I went really just to see who believes something like this. Well, it was a standing room only crowd. And it was mostly people, I would say, between their 40s and their 60s. Again, the baby boomer generation. And a lot of people want to believe it. 90 isn't the new 50. 90 isn't even the new 70.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting because, if we want so much to believe that 90 can be okay, then we don't really try very hard to make sure that 90 feels better. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense in the sense that I had a dear friend who died of leukemia this year at the age of 82. His name was Dr. Robert Butler. He practically invented the field of gerontology, and he was the first director of the National Institute on Aging when it was established in the 1970s. And I asked him, because he was on the 90 is the new 50 panel, and he was the only sensible voice of caution suggesting that maybe some of these brilliant things that were being thrown out by other researchers were things that weren't exactly going to happen tomorrow. And what he said, and I remember the quote very well, is he said, "I'm a scientist. Nobody believes in medical possibilities more than I do, and I'd love to wake up tomorrow morning and read in the newspaper that there was a cure for Alzheimer's disease." But he said, "I hope that'll happen." But he said, "Hope isn't a strategy." And he said, "What it does, like if we believe that medicine is going to cure Alzheimer's tomorrow or in 2 or 3 years, then it stops us from thinking about what do we need to do to make this a better society, and not only for people, the old who are disabled, but for the healthier old now. In other words, if you think that Alzheimer's is going to be cured tomorrow, you don't have to think about what we're going to need to care for the hugely greater number of Alzheimer's people with Alzheimer's 20 years from now.
Let me have you pause right there, Susan, because we need to take a quick break. Susan Jacoby is my guest. Her new book is called Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age. You can join our conversation at 1-800-933-5372. Jeff Whittington joins us now. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Chris Boyd. And what a great conversation. We're all in the room saying, not me, though. I'm never going to grow up.
I think that's the point of this, is that we all say that, and honestly, at some point, it changes for everybody.
It's true. And, it's a great conversation. It's a really refreshing, actually, viewpoint. And when we saw Susan's book come through the mail, I thought, this is going to be a fantastic conversation.
I think
for
we got
show.
It in one day and booked it the next day.
We sure did. And we thought, this is going to be really great. And I'm really enjoying it. I know you're enjoying it, and that's why you're listening. That's why you tune to Think every day is listen to KERA maybe all day long every day, because you enjoy what you hear on the station, whether it's constant coverage, up-to-the-minute coverage of what's going on actually on the ground in Egypt. KERA is there. Whether it's a thoughtful conversation in the middays or today's conversation with Susan Jacoby about the realities of what we all face as we get older, KERA is there for you every single day. And your contribution today can ensure that KERA is here for the next huge international story, for the next fascinating conversation that you get to participate in when you listen to Think every day.
I thought you might be about to say the next generation that comes up after.
Well, that too.
You hit old age.
The station carries on.
It does. And it's here today because someone before you has taken that step and become a member. We have copies if you're interested in reading Susan Jacoby's new book, Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age, available at or above the $120 contribution this afternoon. You can reserve yours by going online to KERA.org or by calling 1-888-694-6931. There's time to get this all taken care of before we get back with Susan in just a couple of minutes.
Yeah, it is your public radio station. Please take a moment right now and go online to KERA.org or contribute on the phone at 888-694-6931. Any of the thank you gifts you've heard about are probably still available unless they were limited tickets or something. There's something for everyone. You can just go to KERA.org. You can scroll through, or maybe you just want to make your contribution go all the way to programming. You can do that too at KERA.org. And thanks so much for your support.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author Susan Jacoby. Her new book is called Never Say Die, The Myths and Marketing of the New Old Age. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. I want to talk more, Susan, about your sense that, you know, skipping ahead mentally to the idea that maybe we won't have to suffer these things is really unhelpful, and that many of us will, in fact, have to deal with these things. Care for people who are suffering from either chronic physical illnesses or Alzheimer's or dementia of any kind, even in the best of circumstances, there's no perfect solution. It's always very expensive, and this is putting a huge strain, not just on individual finances, but on our finances as a country.
Of course, it is, and absolutely there is no perfect solution. I'm glad you mentioned this because I'd like to move a little way off Alzheimer's because also there are other things which are less horrible. Just the normal. Think of something. You're in Texas. Think of something that is one of the most common problems of old age. The age at which, because of vision problems, because of hearing problems, or other kinds of things, in which people can still have good lives, but they can't drive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This is a huge problem, and it prevents it. It has a lot to do with depression in older people, and it prevents people in their 80s and 90s. Who are mentally capable of doing them and really physically things that have given their lives meaning from doing them. One of the things in thinking about the old as if they were all going to be Betty White, who probably doesn't drive and probably has a limo picking her up, is what do we do about that? There are things we need to think about also that aren't as expensive and as global as more long-term care facilities and things like that. How do we help people who can't drive lead productive lives? Well, some of it costs money. One of the things we obviously most cities in America, if you can't drive, you can't have a life. Public transportation is very important. There are all kinds of home care services which nothing like Medicare pays for because they're not really about being unhealthy. They are just about being old the way old really is, as opposed to, again, this fantasy of the sexy skydiving centenarian. There are all kinds of things we could do to make old people's lives better who aren't in the extreme case of being totally dependent, but who, because we have social structures which are built around the active young, and if you envision old age as something that you can, quote, defy, well, then you don't need to think about transportation for people who can't drive anymore, because if you can defy old age, you're always going to be able to drive.
You know, and it's interesting that we somehow, it doesn't really make any sense. We expect an older person to sort of get over the fact that he or she can't drive anymore or can't be as independent as they were before. Whereas, you know, if that had happened to a younger person, we would feel really, we would worry about their mental state. And somehow we think if you're 85 and suddenly you realize you can't drive, you should just deal with it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's the other side of it. There's a very kind of schizophrenic in our attitude about old age. I mean, on the one hand, we pretend that old age today, and especially for us in the future, is going to be totally different from old age in any previous generation. On the other hand, you know, we get annoyed with old people who complain about this kind of thing. So old people, if they want to have good relations with the young, they very quickly learn not to complain too much. Because that's one of the things, the whole idea of, there are a lot of euphemisms, aging successfully, the new old age. Well, one of the qualities that aging successfully has as it's viewed by younger people is, a person who's aging successfully doesn't gripe, doesn't talk about, you know, if they've lost a partner in 2 months, they shouldn't be dwelling on the past so much and having tears going down their faces. If they don't feel good, if they ache a lot every morning, they're not supposed to ever talk about it. And so it's so much more comfortable for us to have this attitude that old age really isn't that bad. And it starts at 65. The Today Show, on the very first Monday of 2011, it naturally saluted the first baby boomers turning 65 in a segment titled Forever Young. and it didn't seem to occur to any of the, quote, experts, unquote, on this panel that there was a big irony in the title themselves. It was all about, oh, the baby boomers have never been quiet about anything, and they're not going to take this lying down. Well, I've got news for them. There are some things that even if you're not quiet about them, you have to take.
You write about the fact that you still have your mother, and she does complain on occasion, and you admire her for it.
Yeah, I do, because she doesn't pretend it's anything other than it is. My uh-huh. mother is 90. She lives in her own apartment in an assisted living facility, and the thing is that we're all capable of aging successfully until we aren't.
Yeah.
2 years ago, if you'd asked me about my mother, I would have said, everything's terrific. She's driving. She's working 20 hours as a volunteer and president of the volunteers at the local hospital. But she is now, she has her every bit of her wits about her that she always had, but her body is simply breaking down from a number of diseases. She's in a great deal of pain from severe osteoporosis, and she can't do most of the things she was able to do 2 years ago. The same thing happened to my grandmother, who died at the age of 99 with all of her wits about her, but she was in a nursing home for 3 years, confined to a wheelchair, basically. Most active woman in the world. You can live too long to live well. And my grandmother certainly did, and she said this herself many times.
Do you fear being old more than you fear dying?
I fear living as long as my mother and grandmother more than I fear dying, because I don't buy the idea that old age can be defied forever. And I certainly fear living beyond the point where I can do the things that gratify me, where I can write, where I can hear you on the phone, which is difficult to do with hearing aids. I understand from people who use them that they're a problem when they're combined with phones. I fear not being able to go out and take a walk when I feel like it, which my mother can't do anymore, unassisted. I absolutely fear. I have no desire to live to 100, and I do not believe that medicine is going to change this situation, nor do I believe that my good health habits, no smoking, moderate drinking, I exercise for an hour every morning when I get up, and I don't believe any of this has to do with how healthy I'm going to be when I'm 90. I think it's a crapshoot.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phones now. We'll speak with Matt in Arlington. Hi, Matt.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead. Yeah, go right ahead, please.
Yes, first, I must admit I have not read your guest book.
It's just published. You shouldn't have.
I'm 67 myself. You know, when people talk about old, you know, if they say that I'm old, I tell them I'm not old, I'm mature. My professor, one of my professors, he's 100 years old, driving his car, he has his mind, he moves about, and I hadn't seen him in 30 years. When I saw him, he shook my hand, remembered my name. You know, diseases, there are some diseases we can't stop. But there are over 3 million people in this country who are over 100 years, who don't live in nursing homes, who don't live in assisted living. So those who are healthy, who are aged, encourage them to continue. You know, we can't say to death, don't come to my door. But we can live a good life as we age.
Matt, thanks for your call. What do you think, Susan?
Well, I would say that, first of all, I'm happy that this gentleman is 67 and doesn't feel old. And I'm happy that his 100-year-old professor is in great shape, too. But this is what everyone does who objects to what I say, which is they cite the exceptions. In fact, there are not 3 million centenarians who live independently. Most of them live with families who are caring for them. That is not living independently. But I think it's great if you're going to be the exception. But you can't count on your being the exception. Being healthy at 67 is not the exception. Being healthy and having all your wits about you at 90 or 100 gets very, very close to being the exception. And this gentleman doesn't, like most Americans, although he has an accent that suggests to me maybe he wasn't born in the United States, but like most Americans, he hates the word old, so he doesn't consider himself old. Well, how many 139-year-olds have you seen walking around lately? I don't know what 67 or 65 in my case is, but it's not middle-aged.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, that the age at which we call ourselves middle-aged has crept up considerably.
It's all crept up, and old is almost, in the media, it's almost a forbidden word. They will always, an editor will always change, if you're writing a magazine or a newspaper article, will always change old. I'm trying to bring back the word old. It was once an honorable word.
Mm-hmm.
An editor will always change it to aging or older. Older Americans. Now, I ask you, older than whom?
Than all the rest of the Americans? Let me ask you
right,
this.
But never just old. It's a three-letter word, the O word.
Well, you have written for the AARP publications, and often you're encouraged mostly to interview people who are under 70.
Well, I wouldn't say encouraged, but the AARP, which does such a great job, in fact, of representing the interests of people in all age groups over the age of 65. But the AARP has also, when they made the decision to admit people at 50, they did it partly because they want to make old look younger.
Mm-hmm.
They want to change the image of the old, of people who are beside the point, and that is great. But to do that often, you have to interview people who aren't really among the old. They're among the young old. I describe this in my book, and I wouldn't say that my editors at the AARP encouraged me. I think the message was that what you want to present is old as being okay if it's the healthy old. And where do you go to find the healthy old? You go to the people who are among the young old. Just as I used to write up sex surveys of old people, which were great and interesting and yielded a lot of fascinating information for the AARP magazine some years ago. And it was always, X percent of old people are having sex. Yes, if they have partners. But that lets out most women over the age of 75.
Sure.
Heterosexual women mostly don't have partners when they're over the age of 75. So again, nobody likes the idea more than me that old people that old people aren't interested in sex is ridiculous. But you can be interested all you want, and if you're an 80-year-old woman, the chances are you're not going to have a partner.
Susan Jacoby is my guest. She writes the Spirited Atheist blog for the Washington Post-sponsored website On Faith, and she's got a new book out called Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age. Our conversation with Susan will continue in a moment. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. Right now, we're going to give you a few minutes. Perhaps you have been waiting for the opportunity to support KERA with a financial contribution. This is the perfect day to do it, this cold and cloudy day in February. You can go online to kera.org, and you can also call 1-888-694-6931. If you want to read Susan Jacoby's book, which, as she mentioned, has just been published, it's available as a thank you gift today at or above the $120 contribution level. Hey, Jeff Whittington.
Hello, Chris Boyd, and hello to you. Thank you so much for listening today, and Chris is absolutely right. You can get your very own copy of Susan's book, Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age. When you join the station today with a $120 contribution, you can do it all at once with your credit or debit card. You can do it at kera.org. You can call 888-694-6931. Or you can set up a sustaining membership and make that a $10 monthly draw from your account to KERA's membership account. And that just kind of keeps your membership, makes it easy for you to budget it. You might not even notice the $10 a month. And it keeps your membership current year-round. So it's a great way. A lot of folks choose to become sustaining members of the station. So you can choose that, or you can ask us to send you an invoice, and we'll send you an invoice, and you can send a personal check into the station. You get to decide. You've already decided to listen. You've already decided that you want up-to-the-minute coverage of breaking news stories around the world. You've already decided that you want thoughtful, intelligent conversations about the issues that we all face in the world from a variety of points of view, and that's why you listen. We hope that today is the day that you'll decide that the station is worth a little bit of your financial support.
KERA.org is the website, or you can go to 1-888-694-6931. You know, I feel like we say this every day, but it's always true that it's great to have you as an audience. You know, we've covered the topic of aging in America multiple times on the show from multiple perspectives. We have, quite frankly, done several shows that present a very optimistic picture of what the future brings, the kinds of things that Susan Jacoby is talking about, and in some cases railing against. I love to be able to bring on Susan and talk about this from an entirely different perspective. She's done her research. She's exceptionally intelligent. She feels very passionately about this. Our job, our aim with this show is never to say, okay, believe the expert we had last week, believe Susan Jacoby, believe someone else that will come a month from now. We say here are people who have done amazing work trying to understand and document these issues, and you decide for yourself. That is the spirit of public radio. It is not what you find in many other broadcast outlets. It's not to say that they don't serve a role, but you know that public radio is unique in this respect. We know that you come to us for exactly that reason in many cases. So your support makes it possible. The other way that we're not like other stations is that we can't go to sponsors and say, we'll run a commercial and try to get people to purchase your product in exchange for money to run the radio station.
Yeah, we do have some corporate supporters, though, and you hear those underwriting announcements, and that's fine. They have to meet our FCC guidelines in order to support the programming, and that's why you don't hear the kinds of messages that
you hear.
It's not
a call to action.
Exactly. You don't hear those kinds of messages on KERA, other than when we ask you to please, you do hear the call to action when we ask you to please call 888-694-6931 or to contribute at KERA.org. Actually, that's perfectly legal and necessary because it's a public radio station. It's absolutely necessary that you, a member of the public who listens to the station, supports it so that it will be here for the next installment in our ongoing series of conversations about aging in America today. So please do your part right now. Please don't wait any longer. You know, this drive has a goal, and there's an ultimate end to it when we reach the goal. But we'll get there so much faster if you go ahead and do your part today.
You know, if you've never gone online or made that phone call to support the station, you might have thought all these years, gosh, I wonder who those people are that actually respond and actually give their money. Honestly, there are people just like you who maybe a few years ago were in the same place thinking, I wonder who does that. And then, you know, they make the decision to support the station. And because you can choose whatever amount of money you want to donate, it can fit perfectly within your budget. We would ask that you consider it seriously now. Go online to KERA.org or join us at 1-888-694-6932. We'll be back in a minute with Susan Jacoby.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Susan Jacoby, author of Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. I was really interested to read your chapter about wisdom and happiness in old age because, full disclosure, we've discussed those studies on the show, the fact that show that older people tend to be happier overall than younger people with their lives. And you remind us that with just a very little digging, it becomes apparent that those reports leave out a lot of information.
Well, what those studies actually really interested me because I didn't know what was wrong with them when I started out. I looked at them, and what I found is, for example, what they actually show is that people in their 60s and 70s are much happier than people in their 40s and 30s and 50s. And then they show that at 80, the ones that include people over 80, the happiness level drops again. So what these studies really show is that people in young old age are happier than people in middle age, which I can really well believe. A lot of the problems you're coping with in with your families and your lives in middle age, they've either been resolved or you're resigned to them by the time you're older. But that, and that happiness drops at 80 doesn't surprise me either. Now, most of these surveys, such as a much-quoted Gallup poll about this, don't even include anybody over 85. So we don't know how those people feel. And, of course, they don't include anybody in the institutionalized population over the age of 85 because you can't call those people. So basically what these surveys really mean is that independent people in their 60s and 70s are happier than people are in their 40s and 30s, and their self-reported happiness is higher. And I believe that. But it doesn't mean that old people in general, as they get older, are happier. It just means that there's a certain period when life satisfaction goes up. And I think, again, the older is happier mantra is just part of this attempt to make old age something other than it is. And you know, you mentioned wisdom. The thing I think is really the most false idea is the wisdom of old age, that old age brings wisdom. Not that there aren't a lot of wise old people. My grandmother, I think, was the wisest person I've ever known in my life. And you know what? She wasn't wiser in her 90s than she was in her 60s. She was always an incredibly smart, wise woman who knew a lot about how to live. And I closed my book with a line from my grandmother that I've never forgotten. It was the last time I saw her, a few months before her death, and I took her from her nursing home and to the bank of a nearby river where we sat and had lunch, and she said how happy she was. She felt like she'd been let out of prison. And just before she left, just before we got back into the car, she looked around, she looked over the river, and she said, "It's good to know that the beauty of the world will go on without me."
Hmm.
And I thought, well, if I can say that at the end of my life, even if I can't defy old age, as no one can, I'll consider my life a success. But that was the person my grandmother had always been. What I see about aging and old people is people become what they are only more so as they get older. In other words, if you're a person who's incurious about the world, who is lazy, who's mean and nasty at 40 or 50, you are not going to get nicer and wiser at 70 or 80 or 90. You are going to probably be more of what you were then. But if you are somebody who has the luck to keep your mind, and if you value learning and endeavor and other people and all of those things that make for a good life, you can retain those qualities into old age too. But the idea that just getting old brings wisdom is ridiculous.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go next to Greg in Dallas. Hi, Greg. Greg, are you with us? Okay, we will move on to Lynn in Benton. Hi, Lynn.
Hi,
go right ahead, please.
Okay. Some people might find my opinions extreme or too liberal, but for years I have felt that the government puts too much emphasis on staying alive. We put a lot of money into trying to keep people alive that maybe would prefer not to be alive.
What is it, the figure that you quote, that a third of the money Medicare will spend on each of us will likely be spent in the very last month of our lives, Susan?
The last year of our lives.
Last year. Mm-hmm.
And half of the Medicare budget is spent in the last month of life.
Hmm. Unbelievable.
This lady brings up something interesting, which is one of all of the irrational news developments of the last, let's say, 6 weeks, and there are so many. But one of the most irrational was when President Obama backed down on he was going to allow Medicare to pay for voluntary consultations between patients and doctors about end-of-life care. This was, of course, a cave into the far right, which considers talking to your doctor about what kind of care you do and don't want as a, quote, death panel, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that people, there are basically two positions on this, which is I want everything done no matter what to keep me alive, and do everything, but only if there's a chance that I can recover and live a normal life. Now, every public opinion poll shows that the overwhelming majority of Americans take the second position, not the first. But if people don't speak with their doctors and their loved ones about this, if they don't express their wishes in writing, the lady on the phone is right. The default position of the medical care system, in the absence of instructions to the contrary, is do everything. So it's not, you know, it's not just the government. It's people have to take responsibility, not only for putting down their wishes in writing, but for appointing a person and authorizing them legally to act on their wishes if they can no longer act for themselves. There is a way that people can prevent having the kind of medical care they wouldn't want if they could speak for themselves. But people have to take responsibility. And also, one of the good things about consultations with doctors would have been that doctors are just as uncomfortable with the subject of death and dying as anybody else. And often, and also, Medicare reimburses for procedures. It'll pay tens of thousands of dollars for a surgery to keep you alive another month, but not for a half-hour talk with your doctor about, do I want to be on a ventilator? Do I want to be fed artificially? That kind of thing.
Let's go. We have time for one more call. We'll speak to Pamela in Fort Worth. Hi, Pamela.
Hi. I'm so glad to get through. Great topic, needs to be talked about. Almost couldn't get to you because you said your number's so fast. I'm getting older.
Sorry about that.
I'm 57. I've been a nurse for almost 40 years. Recently lost my job. I've literally worked myself to death. And having been a hospice nurse for a lot of those years,
oh, wow.
There are a lot worse things, like you were talking about. There is a lot worse things than dying, a lot worse. My dilemma is at 57 and not really able to physically work like I used to as a nurse, is that I'm not old enough to get help and not young enough to be considered young. And I would like to know, how can we overcome this absolutely stigma of old is bad, and that when you get old, it's almost considered shameful to me, the way that people view it. Or there seems to be a lot attached to that kind of thinking. And I've never thought or felt mentally better. I do believe wisdom is a life experience, not something you get older and get.
Pamela, let me interrupt you, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to rush you off, but I want to make sure we have time to get a response, and I hope
sure,
that
absolutely.
Things work out for you. What do you think, Susan?
Well, for one thing, by the way, I'm just reminded, old age is really a woman's issue because so many more of the old, and I'm not talking about this caller who's only 57, are women than are men. But I think one of the things, again, if you think that old age is going to be a picnic, you don't have to think about other things. There are we hear a lot of talk right now about raising the retirement age. How about providing some part-time jobs for a lot of people who want to work but who don't fit into the economy as it's structured? I bet you somebody who was a hospice nurse for 40 years and a nurse for 40 years has a lot that she could do to help with the training of new medical personnel. But there are no, for example, almost no part-time jobs of that kind for older people. Again, this is how thinking about old as an either-or kind of thing. You're either going to defy old age or you can't do anything. It also prevents you of thinking about, I would like to know, where is the support going to come for these people who are supposed to work to an older retirement age? Since at the moment we don't have an economy that provides jobs for people who are below the age of 65, anything like full employment, how are those people who are going to be encouraged to retire later? Where are the jobs for them coming from? I mean, that's a whole thing we need to think about, because there are lots of people in their 60s and 70s or 80s who are capable and willing to work, But there are no jobs that fit a niche for them in this economy. That's just one of the issues. But I would say in closing, to return to the old age as a woman's issue thing, old becomes old faster for women than for men. Just look at how quickly widowers are snapped up when their wives die, and look at how few widows over the age of 65 ever remarry.
Susan Jacoby's newest book is called Never Say Die, The Myth and Marketing of the New Old Age. Susan, it's been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
It's been fascinating for you, Texas. I've had so many emails from Texas since an article of mine appeared in the Dallas Morning News a couple weeks ago.
Well, we're interested to hear what you have to say, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
Susan Jacoby was our guest this hour. Jeff Whittington is here now. If you would like to read Never Say Die and it is time for you to establish or renew your support of KERA, you can get in touch with us now at kera.org or at, let me give you this phone number correctly this time, 1-888-694-6931. That is the correct telephone number, which I gave incorrectly earlier.
Oh, you didn't have to issue a correction, Chris.
I wouldn't want someone out there with the number one digit off like I gave it is being deluged with calls. You can receive a copy of Susan's book at or above the $120 contribution level.
And you can do that at 888-694-6931. I don't know what I was thinking there for a second. I wasn't thinking. Or you can do it online at kera.org. That was great. She was fantastic.
Yeah.
I thought she was hilarious. Obviously dealing in a very sort of cheerful way with, that big letter D that everybody faces. And you know what? We forget that I guess we do sort of forget that we're all mortal from time to time, because it's just not
we have
something
no
you want to deal
with. Not being mortal.
Exactly.
So it's hard to put yourself in that place.
That's right. But it was great to have her on the show today. And I think we got a lot of calls. Really impressed, actually. And thanks so much to everybody who is listening. Sorry we couldn't get to each of you on the phone today, but it's great to know that you're still listening. You're still listening during this membership campaign. And it's great to know that you're there and you're getting something out of the show, in spite of the fact that we do have to take these breaks during the show to remind you that it's your support, it's your call to that other number or your online contribution that makes these conversations possible. From coverage of the street clashes in Cairo to a conversation about the realities of aging in America today, you get it all right here on KERA every single day, and it's here for you. It's here for you 24 hours a day. All we're asking you to do is to be here for KERA one time in a year with a $35 or a $350 or a $3,500 contribution, any level in between. You get to decide what it's worth. We just want you to make that decision, make that call. Do it online at kera.org or go to the phone and dial 888-694-6931.
This is your source for NPR News, 90.1 KERA, Dallas-Fort Worth-Denton, 100.1 K261CW, Tyler, 88.3 K202DR, Wichita Falls, 99.3 K257EV, Sherman. Your contribution to this station really is a contribution to a North Texas community institution. We take some national and international programming, but we are based here. We live and work and have homes in North Texas. We're one of you. You're one of us. You are part of KERA as a listener. So many of you have come forth as contributors and made the station strong. Just, try out a membership. See what it feels like to become a member for the first time. I imagine that next year when this all rolls around, you'll think, well, that wasn't so bad. I'll do it again. But the point is there's no obligation. You can try it this year, see how it goes, see how much better you feel about being a supporting member of this resource that you use every day. And you can make it as affordable as you choose to at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931.
You have thousands of your fellow North Texas citizens, or if you don't live in North Texas, your fellow KERA listeners to thank for the fact that this station exists and that this program is here for you to listen to today, and for, that the next hour will be here for you to listen to, and all things considered, it'll be here for you to listen to this afternoon. And they hope that you will join them by supporting the station yourself. Your contribution today will ensure that the station is here for you the next time you use it, as well as for someone who may discover the station fresh and then join you in your support of the station. It's an ongoing circle of giving that makes this public radio station a reality. And it's fun, actually, to be involved with KERA, because you'll sort of get a charge out of the fact that, hey, I helped make that show possible. Wow, that was a great show. Did you hear that conversation on KER today? Well, you know what? I helped make that possible because I'm a member. And then you can ask your friends and your family members and your colleagues, hey, did you do your part for KERA? Because I know you listen because we talk about it all the time. And pretty soon, everybody who joins gets the drive over with. We get back to the regular schedule. And you can listen knowing that you've really done a great part for your public radio station and the fact that you listen to this station every single day.
We've had something over 4,000 contributions, I believe, so far this drive. Imagine walking into a basketball stadium filled with dedicated public radio supporters, and you were the only one of those thousands that hadn't yet made a contribution, and you'd say, well, I do love public radio. They would all look at you and jeer and boo. Let them cheer you instead and welcome you into the fold at 1-888-694-6931. You can also always make a contribution online at kera.org. At $120 or above, choose a copy of Susan Jacoby's new book, Never Say Die. Thanks.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.